When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold.
Nevertheless, Wednesday night we've been speaking about how the Lord led. In reference to our exercise for the ministry and our coming down south, and last week, if I remember correctly, we stopped at Raleigh, North Carolina, and how the Lord led there and what the Lord did. How we had that one campaign in Clayton, how the Lord so remarkably led into our taking that campaign alone, and how he came in and wonderfully blessed, and then he was saved, and that was the beginning of my launching out single-handed, although I did have a couple of campaigns that were mentioned a little or two with the same brother that I came about this, Brother Fred Luther. But the desire of my heart as a young Christian, and especially after the Lord put the burden on our hearts for souls, for precious souls, that seemed to be the consuming passion of my heart. Until one night, and the Lord taught me a lesson that has stayed with me, frankly, ever since. During that campaign in Clayton, I think it was the night seven had to be back and confess Christ and forth up the way, and that was a lot for me to be saved. Just starting out, we were 51 during these 5 weeks. The night the seventh day back, and spoke of different days. Instead of rejoicing as I thought I would, I didn't rejoice. I somehow went home heavy-hearted. The folks I was riding in in the car, the chapel, they couldn't understand my being so quiet. But somehow, I just felt heavy-hearted and hollow-hearted. I couldn't understand it myself. So I went immediately to my bedroom on getting home. As I did, I drew myself across the bed, and it was right at the window. And I asked the Lord why it was that I wasn't happy over the blessing, you see. And I looked up, I looked out the window, and looking right down, it seemed on me, was a full moon. Moon was full. And as you know, sometimes they claim they can see a face in the moon. Well, it just seemed to me as though the Lord was looking right down. And this was the message that seemed to come to me right there. It's not service, even fruitful service, that truly satisfies the heart of the Christian. It's only Christ. I learned that lesson that night. That if you saw 1,000 saved, that wouldn't fully satisfy you. It makes you happy. But service cannot replace the Master. No matter how you engage in service, or how much you are blessed in your service, only the Lord Jesus Christ can do that. Because if your service is not fruitful, and at times you have a down period, if your joy depends upon your fruitful service, you're going to be unhappy. Because if you're not seeing much done for the Lord, then you're not going to be very joyful in the Lord. But if you're occupied with Christ, even though you don't see much being done in the way of fruit in your labors, the Lord Jesus doesn't care. And therefore you have Him, and He only truly satisfies. I never will forget that night, and it's taught me a lesson that I have profited from unto this day. Another experience I had in Raleigh, as we told you, we stayed with the chapel at 1909 Sunset Drive, Raleigh. And one morning while we were sitting there chatting, Mrs. Chapel said, Wilson, you know, it's a strange thing that we started building this home the same month that you got saved up in Canada. 6 years ago. And you know, since that time, Jimmy and I have been praying for God to send us a preacher. We made that room that you're sleeping in, we made that room a prophet's chamber. We really didn't need an extra room. We had two other bedrooms, but we decided one night we were going to build an extra room onto the house. That was going to be the prophet's chamber. And from that time till now, we have been praying that the Lord would send us a young preacher to occupy that room and make this his headquarters. You know, we've had a lot of preachers come through, for he said most of them have been married men, and we didn't feel we could invite them to stay with us. Then she said there were a couple of single preachers came through, but one of them was so shocked that people wouldn't understand them. And the other one was Irish, and they didn't think that his type preaching would quite suit the people in North Carolina. So she said, Jimmy and I, last night, we talked it all over, and we felt that you were the one the Lord had sent to occupy that room. Now she said, it's up to you to accept it or reject. You may have that room, stay here as long as you like, and that'll be your room, and you can have your meals here. It won't cost you a penny. You want to make this your headquarters. I stayed there for 3 years. The chapels were just like parents to me, and as the Bible says, they do forsake the father and mother, the same shall find father and mother. And I certainly found the father and mother in the Jason Chapel of Raleigh, North Carolina. So that is a very unusual thing and another indication of the leading of the Lord. Well, about that time, Mr. Nugent wrote down saying there was a Bible conference in Newport News, Virginia over New Year's, and would I like to go along? I said, yes, I would like to go along to the conference. So he came through Raleigh and picked me up. We went on down to Newport News for the Bible conference, a very large conference. It was held in the Warwick Hotel. We used the big auditorium in the hotel, and of course all the assistants and folks who came from afar stayed in the hotel and occupied about all the rooms, while the local Christians in Newport News were quite a number of them, and they did take some into their home visitors. But at that conference, there were a lot of men. I suppose I was the youngest preacher there, and there were about 25 or 30 of them. Most of them were old pioneers, men that you wouldn't know if I mentioned their names, like the Bradford, Mr. McEwen, and so on. Men who had been preaching the gospel for 30 and 40 and 50 years. So one night, Mr. Nugent and myself were having supper. It was just before the Sunday night service. And one of the men in charge of the conference came over and said, we'd like you two men to preach tonight. And I said, yeah, pray it. No, he said, we want you to preach too. I said, no, I don't want to preach. He said, well, just trust the Lord. So that was it. Well, I had just started my supper. I think I'd taken about 4 bites. I didn't take another one. I thought I was about to lose the 4 I'd already taken. So I had to get up from the table and go up to my room in the hotel, and I'll assure you I was scared to death. I knew the audience would be there that night, especially all these veteran preachers, and here I was the youngest one in the crowd. So I spent my time in my room, and finally Fred came up to my room and tried to encourage me to go ahead. When I walked up on that platform and looked out on that audience and saw these two front rows just lined with these gray-haired veterans of the Word, I felt like saying, well, now, I appreciate it very much, and I could flap my wings a whole lot better if you better slip off and have a prayer meeting for me somewhere in one of these rooms. But nevertheless, the Lord, in His grace, came in and gave help on that occasion. So after that experience in the Newport News, they asked us and urged us to stay for a series of meetings, which we did, and we preached for 6 weeks. Chapel in Newport News, and then I went back to Raleigh, and they were out there, especially among those local places where we had been preaching. summertime drew on, and another thing that happened back in Canada, as I told you, my parents more or less depended on me when I left them, and I came south depending upon the Lord only, with no salary of any kind, with no promise from anyone for a penny, just the living God in heaven to meet my needs. Well, I left in July, and in December my father fell and broke his head. Riding his bicycle to work on the icy road, his bicycle went out from under him and he broke his head, and his working days were over. When I got news of that, it just simply meant that it was up to me to shoulder that responsibility financially, which I sought to do. Sought to do from that day on. So then the time came when I thought the time was to go home. In fact, Fred was wanting to go up to Canada, and we went out to Canada to see our folks, and from there we went over to Chicago. Mr. Kennedy, who was here last Sunday morning, Jim Kennedy, he was one of the first men I met there in that big chapel, Robert Memorial, one of the largest in Chicago. And we met Mr. Kennedy at that time, and I've known him ever since. He's been a real companion, a real prayer partner. So we had this 7-week campaign in the Robert Memorial Church in Chicago, and then we came back down to Raleigh. Well, after the blessing we had seen in Newport News, the brethren there wanted us, Mr. Newton and I, to come back and operate the tent in the summer, so we did. We went back and had 8 weeks of meetings right in Newport News in the tent. Well, that was the last campaign that Fred and I were together. The Lord came in, and lots of people were saved. Crowds came every night, and a couple of times Carlos came down from Raleigh, down to Newport News, just a couple of hundred miles. Fred said to me one night, he said, Lester, why are they coming down from Raleigh? Well, the reason they were coming down from Raleigh was they wanted me to come back to Raleigh. They thought possibly I was going to stay down in Newport News. Well, to tell you the truth, I was caught between two currents. I thought a lot of Fred Nugent, and we've seen a lot of lessons together, and yet I felt that God had taught me a lesson, as I mentioned last week, that my place of labor was in North Carolina. So I told Fred, I said, Fred, they want me back in North Carolina, and I think I'll go. Some of you seem to like it very well, but anyway, we decided to return. A couple of days later, I was to leave on the boat. We went across the Newport News to Norfolk, get the train on back to Raleigh, and Fred and I stood on the dock there. This is where my text from this. Fred said, Lester, when are you coming back? Going. I said, Fred, I just can't stay. Well, he said, I believe, if I know anything, I believe the Lord teamed us up together. I believe He brought us together, labored together in the Lord's work. And I think possibly the Christians of Raleigh are leading you up the Lord's path. Well, Fred, I said, the Word says this, He knoweth the way that I take. And that's the text of it. He said, do you know the rest of that text? I said, no, I don't, not by thy hand. Well, he said, this is the rest. When he hath tied me, I shall come forth as gold. He said, if you're in the Lord's will, it's true, he knows the way that he takes. If you're going to be tied. He said, I am sorry you're going to leave me, because I enjoyed being with you, and we had some happy times together. I'm sorry you're going, and I think you're making a mistake. Once again, I said, Fred, he knoweth the way that I did. So that this time, I went on to the boat, and Fred was standing there on the dock. We thought a lot of each other, still did until I left here, as you know, 3 or 4 years ago. I went to Canada and took the delusion to him. But, after that, the Lord so blessed us back in North Carolina that Fred Nugent was such a godly man man who feared God, that he could see that I had chosen the right path. Afterwards, he met many times, shouted his home, he moved to come back to Canada, and he realized that I was in the Lord's will in going back to the law, the way the Lord had left. So then we went back to the chapel, the place I referred to a little while ago. But there was an experience that happened in Newport News. It'll do well to refer to strengthen your faith. Because in those days, the Lord was strengthening mine, putting me into experiences that increased my faith. Now remember this experience. Lord Day came. I was staying with Mr. and Mrs. Newton at that time. I used to pay them $7.50 a week, $15 for 2 weeks. So I used to pay every 2 weeks. Well, Lord Day came, and I got up that morning, I had $3 in my pocket. So I did some prayer. I told the Lord I needed $15 that day. And the mailman came, and he left, and he didn't leave anything. He kept a card. And on that card it was that a parcel was down at the postal office for me. And it says carrying charge gave the price of the parcel $2.72. Postal charges or carrying charges extra. I said to Fred, what does that mean? He said, it means if it's been there after so many days, you pay so much per day. Per day for staying down. I was, oh my. I didn't tell him, he didn't know what I was a millionaire. I had $3 in my pocket and board debt. And I thought of all days for this thing to come along. So we went on down to the postal office and he said that I'm going to be, I didn't know he'd be up in the car because I didn't know what to do with more than $3. I didn't want him to see that I just had $3. I'd have to let it there. I said, no, I said, you stay in the car. I don't want to see you in there a minute. No, he said, I'll go in. So he came in. I had the clerk to pick the card and looked at it and then got the pocket. It was the book that I had my mother sent down. I said, how much do I owe you? He said, $2.72. I said, no carrying charges. No, he said, has been here 5 days. Oh, I thought that's fine. I had 28 cents left. Still war day. So then something else jolted me a minute or two later. Fred says, you know, tonight's children's night. We used to have children's night on the Friday night, I think it was. We'd have about 100 children come out. One of us would speak to the children, the other would treat the adult rappers. We used to treat them. Every Friday night, we'd give the youngsters something to eat. And it used to cost us about $1 a piece, about $2. Oh, I got 23 cents. And children's night. So he said, well, we get the kids tonight. I said, I don't know, Fred. Let's go over to Five and Ten Cent Store. First thing in my mind. So we went over to Five and Ten Cent Store, and just we walked in, we came right in face to face with the candy counter, and all I saw there was a great big face full of these kisses wrapped up in paper. And I saw them 10 cents a pound. My mind began working pretty quick. I got 10 cents a pound. 5 pounds, that's 50 cents, 25 cents to him, 25 cents to me. And I said to the girl, I said, how many of those in a pound? Well, she weighed them up, she said, about 40 in a pound, that's 200, that's 253 kids. I just said, that's all right. He thought, and then he said, well, I guess it'll be all right. I said, sure, that's plenty. Well, he said, all right. So I hand over my quarter, I treat that way. Well, we had the meeting that night, and I was still thinking about board day. 3 pennies in my pocket. After the meeting, a brother by the name of John Lloyd, he came up to me, he said, Brother Wilson, he said, here's a letter. He said, I forgot to give it to you last night. He said, I should have given you last night. He said, I brought it tonight. Well, if he knew what I thought of him. Because I got the letter, and as soon as I got an opportunity, I opened it, and there were $15. So that was about 9:30 that night, and I paid my board on board deck. Not until the Lord introduced me to 3 pennies. But they were one of the experiences I had in Newport News. The Lord was speaking to me to strengthen our faith. Well, I see our time's about up, 1:30, and I'm not going to go over this time. So next week we'll continue on the Lord's leading. We'll get back to Raleigh and see what he did there, and then after that, all over Winston, Salem, and end up, I suppose, about 50 miles down here in Alden. As we go through chapter by chapter of he, leader, me. Showing that God is the same today as he was 2,000 years ago or 4,000 years ago. He still leads his people, still meets their needs. He tests them, he tries them. All it requires is simple, childlike faith. And we find out, although it's true, you know the way that I take, that when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. The trials are to that end, he might come forth as gold. Gold is that which speaks of, that which abides and stands the fire. You know, you read in Corinthians, here's a Christian's life brought into review, and the one man has wood, hay, and stubble, and all is up in smoke. And maybe plenty of wood, plenty of hay, plenty of stubble. It looks big and pretentious. The poor man, when it's put in the fire, nothing but ashes left. That's the life of some Christians. But what is it that abides the fire? Wood? Hay and stubble is what burns, is burnt up in the fire. Gold, silver, precious stones. These are the things that abide the fire. The fire in that case is the presence of God, but our God is a consuming fire. He'll consume everything that's not done according to his will and for his glory. That which is done according to his will and for his glory will abide his presence and be rewarded at the judgment seat of Christ. And so the gold is found heading the lips of that which abides the presence of God and will give his honor and glory and wild reward forever. For when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Only gold to teach us this truth. Let's be faithful in our trials and trust in day to day. That will produce the glory that will abide his presence and be rewarded by him in that soon coming day of reward. Heart cut off, wait a little while. I'm just going to make an announcement, they won't want that on it. Psalm 32. And verse 8. Psalm 32 and 8. I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. And another text in 1 Corinthians 16. 1 Corinthians 16. And verse 9, 1 Corinthians 16 and 9. For a great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. Now, in the last 5 or 6 weeks, we've been speaking on the Lord's leading. That is, in my own personal life, and I've tried to bring out the way the Lord leads, and trusting it'll be a stimulant to all our faith. And as each week I sat down for a little while in the morning to
recall some of the things that happened 25, 30 years ago, I've been amazed how freshly they seem to float back out of the past, and happy thoughts. And as I reminisced over those days gone by, how God led so definitely, we're going to continue these messages until we end up right here in Albany. The Lord's leading, and as He leads one, He may lead another. And it is leading of my case, of some encouragement to you, that's wonderful. So tonight, we want to get back into Raleigh. Last week, you remember, we went down to Newport News and got back to Raleigh, where it seems the Lord had singly pointed out that we were to reside. On the way back from Newport News to Raleigh, North Carolina, I didn't have a car at that time. I told you how the Lord sold the one I had before I left Canada. So, on the way back by bus from Newport News to Raleigh, I was riding down, looking out, watching the signs as we approached Raleigh, and I saw a big sign, "See Rawls for used car." Well, I say I didn't have a car, and I realized I needed one. So when arriving back in Raleigh, I began praying about one, and the next day as I was uptown, I saw a car go by, and it was a 1931 Chevrolet maroon and black. Now that may go back beyond some of you, but many of you remember that year and the car they drove at that time. But anyway, as I saw that car pass, I thought, that's the kind of car I want, and I just somehow fell for it. So the next day, I was in my room, or not in my room, in the front room of the chapel residence in Raleigh. Mrs. Chapel had gone out, but the chapel was working with the pharmacist. So I was in the front room on my knees praying that the Lord would make it possible for me to have an automobile, for I knew I needed one. Well, I had $75 in my pocket, and I knew that was a long way from buying an automobile, and furthermore, I needed a suit. So while I was on my knees, there was a knock at the door. I got off my knees to answer the door, and Mrs. Herbert Riddle, she's still alive in Raleigh, she was at the door, and as I answered, she said, "Mr. Wilson, the Lord has laid something on my heart, and I thought I'd come around and give it to you." She says, "Here's $50 for you to buy a car. Help to buy one." Well, now, this is around 29 years ago, and you know what $50 was like then and what it was worth. Why, it was about worth equal to $150 to $200 today. Well, I said, "Mrs. Riddle, do you know, I was just on my knees praying that the Lord would enable me to get an automobile. And I certainly thank you for this." She says, "Well, I hope you'll be able to," and she left. So the next afternoon, after some more prayer, I thought, "Well, I'm going uptown, see what I can do. I've got $125. I went to the post office to mail some letters, and as I came out on the other side of the post office, I looked up, and here I saw on the top of this big building, "Rawls Used Car." I thought, that's the sign I saw coming in on the bus the other day. So I went over there, and one of the salesmen walked up to me, and he said, "Can we help you?" I said, "Well, what kind of used cars have you got?" "Well, he said, you've got some good used cars." I said, "Have you got any Chevrolet?" "Yes, we got a 1931 Chevrolet, two-door. That's just the car I wanted." So we went downstairs to go to all the used cars downstairs and pointed that car up to me, and it was a maroon and black, just exactly what I wanted. I said, "That's the car I want." "Well," he said, "that's just a year old, that car." And he said it was $750. Now, I think it's getting a car new for $750. That's what a 1931 Chevrolet cost in 1931. And this is a year later, so. I said, "How much do you want for now?" "Well," he said, "let's go for a ride first." Then we did. We drove around the block. I said, "What do you want for it?" He said, "Do you have a car to trade in?" I said, no, I don't have a car. Well, he says, no, we generally have two prices. Or if anyone dealing in cars knows that, if you've got cash, you get a little cheaper. You just want to trade in, generally, another price. So he said, well, we'll sell it for $325. Well, I thought that was pretty good. It had 21,000 miles on it. So I said, well, I'll pray about it. So we went upstairs, and I went out on the street in Raleigh and crossed over, and I met Mr. Allen. Now, Mr. David Allen was the one, as you know, that made us the loan on the other building. I said, David, I've been over to Rawls, and I'm interested in a car over there. They got a good used car. He said, what kind of a car is it? And I told him. Well, he said, you know, I do all my car buying at Rawls. I get a new car there every second year. And I also buy trucks for my business. He said, I'll go over and see Mr. Rawls. So he went over and saw Mr. Rawls. And when I came back a couple hours later, Mr. Rawls said, Mr. Wilson, he said, you may have that car for $275, including the license. Well, that was $50 off what the salesman told me, $325. Well, I said, I'll take it. And he sat down, figured it out. He said, the down payment, including the license, is $104. I said, that's fine. So I had my car. When I went down to drive it away, why, I told the salesman what I was getting it for, and he was mad. He said, I could have got $310 for that this morning. He said, Mr. Rawls wouldn't come down from the price this morning, $325, he said, that was the price. He wouldn't come down. I could have got more than that for this morning. Well, anyway, I got it for $375, including the price. And then, as I say, it cost $104. So I had $21 to buy a suit with. I went uptown, and I met one of the Christians there, Mr. Horace Martin. He still is alive in Raleigh. And I said, Horace, if I was practically new around there, and I said, where's a good place to buy a suit? Come on over. I'll show you where I buy mine. So he took me over, and there was a door operated by a Jew. So finally, I'm looking around, and I saw the suit I wanted, and a few pair of trousers, and I said, how much is this suit? So Horace took this fellow aside, whispered something to him. And I didn't tell Horace how much money I had. I didn't say the name to anyone. No one knew I just had this $21 in my pocket. So finally, they had a little conversation. I just what Horace said, I don't know, but he came over, and I believe Horace was kind of twisting his arm a little because he wasn't too happy. Well, he said, I'll sell you the suit for $18.50, two pair of trousers. I said, thank you. I'll take it. Well, I got home with a car and a suit and $2.50. So I thought I did pretty good. So that was the way I got my car in Raleigh, and that was just one of those many incidents that happened back in those early days. Then we began to get exercised about another place for the meeting. Mr. Chappell already referred to, he was a pharmacist, one of the chief pharmacists in the big King Wholesale Drug Company in Raleigh. He used to wait on a lot of doctors and so on that came in there, and a doctor, O.L. Ray, who was head of the Board of Education up there, came into the pharmacy one day, and Mr. Chappell said, Dr. Ray, do you know of any vacant buildings out in the country, he said, like school buildings or community buildings that are available for a campaign. Ray said, what kind of a campaign? Well, he said, an evangelistic campaign. Why, he said, who do you want to preach? Well, he said, there's a young Canadian staying with me, been with me now for about a year. And he's going to locate around here, And I was just wondering if there might be a place out in the country, because he wants to get out into the out-of-the-way places to preach. Just as Dr. Ray said, there's a place right up at Six Forks, only about a half a mile from my home. It used to be a Christian church, but it hasn't been used for 2 years, and the windows are all knocked out, he said, and the dirt robbers have taken over, the doors are open, and he said the kids have been in there doing a lot of damage. He said, as far as I know, there's only one elder left of the board of, one deacon of the board of deacons, that church, and that's Mr. Lynn. He used to be sheriff here many years ago. And he said, as far as I know, he's the only one who has any say-so about that building, but he said it's in a mess. How long does this fellow want to preach in it? Mr. Chappell said, oh, maybe 6 weeks. And he just roared laughing. He said, why, they couldn't get anybody to go there once a month. How are you going to get anybody there for 6 weeks? And he'll do well to get people to come in for a week around our place. They just don't go to church. Because it was a rural section. Well, Mr. Chappell came home and told me about it, and we went out immediately and contacted this Mr. Lynn, and he said, I don't see any reason why you can't have it. No service has been held there for 2 years, but the building will need a lot of fixing up. So the next Saturday afternoon, a number of the men at Raleigh in the chapel there, and myself, we went out, we went to work cleaning up that building. And some were putting in the glass panes, others were getting all the dirt out of it, other scraps, and taping up the seats and washing them. While we were doing that, I was going through a cabinet that was up at the front of the platform, and I came across a card with some other papers and Sunday school papers that had been left there for 2 years. As I looked at it, I said, fellas, look at this. And this was the text I read it to you here a while ago. A great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. And just then a man stepped into the doorway. And he smiled and said it's the time of day. Come to find out that this denomination that owned this building had sent him down there to try and get that thing going again. I thought, well, sure enough, we've got an adversary right here. After we got permission to use the building, we were cleaning it all up, getting ready to start a campaign. It was away out from Raleigh, about 9 miles. And here's a man sent along by the denomination that has practically abandoned the property, and now he wants to get something going and try and revive the old testimony. The old membership. Well, anyway, we had a little talk, and he seemed a little bit disturbed, but he couldn't do much about it, seeing we'd already got the okay from the only living deacon. Well, we went ahead and started meetings, and for 6 weeks, we preached in that church building. The place was packed night after night. And Dr. Royal Ray said to me, he had me over to his house for deal one evening, and I think Mrs. Ray got saved in those meetings. Said, Wilson, you know, he said, I was very apprehensive about you having meetings here. I didn't think that people would come out. He said, you know, I only missed one night myself in 6 weeks. So he didn't think anybody would come for 1 week, let alone six, but he admitted that he enjoyed the Word of God. And there were quite a number saved during that time. I think over 20, 23, if I remember correctly, found Christ during those meetings. I was thinking just before I sat down of one unusual case. His name was Mr. Stevens. They said that whenever Mr. Stevens, he was a farmer living about a half a mile from the old church building, and when you'd hear him out plowing, you could hear him cursing all over the place. He had a very loud voice, and his old mule gets kind of stubborn at times, and he'd cuss that mule out. And the other farmers, you could hear him almost a mile away shouting and cussing that mule. Well, Mr. Stevens came along to those meetings, and he got saved. And he was a happy soul. After that, they used to hear him singing hymns all over the countryside. It was quite a change, and hope you'd say, well, I'll tell you. If any man got changed around here during those campaign meetings, Mr. Stevens did. So remember the day we were going to have the baptismal service that night. We had to have it in Raleigh because we didn't have a baptismal service out there. I went around that morning visiting the young converts, and Mr. Stevens was out in the field. And he was singing his going on down the field with the plow and the mule. I said, Mr. Stevens, are you still going to be baptized tonight? He said, amen, brother. He said, if I could get near some water, I'd baptize the mule. He said, I'm going to obey the Lord. He was just that happy. And he found baptism was in the Bible, and he was going to be baptized. So they were some of the happy times we had at Six Walk. Then we went over to Wendell, a place 24 miles east of Raleigh. This was quite a place. It was a community building near a little town called Corinth. And the amazing thing to me is there are so many little villages around there with Bible names. For instance, there's a place called Zebulun and there's a place called Corinth and so on. But we heard about this community. It was a very wicked community. A lot of bootleggers lived there. And they said they didn't go to church. And a lot of fights going on in that community. So we saw this big community building, and it holds about 700 people. There was a service held there once a month, and the preacher came from quite a distance to hold this service. They had 12 men on the board of deacons, and the only pay that preacher got was his car loaded down with collard greens and potatoes and vegetables like that. He got no money. All he got was vegetables. But he went back home happy, a couple of chickens walking in the back seat along with it. That was his salary. So we got the use of this building. In fact, the preacher and the congregation couldn't say much about it because it was a community building and anyone could preach in it but a Roman Catholic or a communist or a Jehovah's Witness. That was just the three of them. So we got the use of the building and started these meetings. And this preacher used to come for his afternoon service once a month, so there was no conflict of the time. We went right on through Christmas and New Year's. I think out of those 7 weeks, it rained 5 weeks out of the seven. There were 4 miles of dirt road from Wendell over to the church building. And I'm going to tell you, those roads were simply horrific. Mr. Allen pulled the battery right off the bottom of his car one night and then stuck in the mud, left there in the mud. We used to see people walking, and several nights we left Raleigh to go out there, and about 24 miles or so out there. Actually, I thought it was useless to go. The weather was so bad, and the rain was coming down. It had been raining all day, and I could say to Jimmy Chappell and Mrs. Chappell and some of the other fellows going up, you're going to go tonight, Mr. Wilson? I said, I don't see the need of it, but we'll go. If even one person comes, if they're coming out weather like this, they deserve to be preached to. You know, we'd get there and see sometimes as high as 200. And at times, we'd meet mothers within 2 miles of that church. Rubber boots off, raincoat off, and a bit of an umbrella. One little child in her arms, or if it was able to walk, it was trudging close to her, and another one trudging behind through the mud, and they had another pair of shoes under the raincoat, and when they got to the big building, they'd take off their rubber boots and put on the other shoes and go on into the building. And that happened time and time again, walking 2 and 2.5 miles just to hear the gospel, way out in the open country. I thought, well, people are willing to do this to hear the word of God, I'm going to go every night. We had some tragic things happening there one night. Mr. Chappell came in and the queues were quite long. I suppose they were anywhere about 16 feet to 18 feet in length. And the people used to just about fill them right up near the front. And Mrs. Chappell came in and so they moved over to make room for her. And as she sat down, evidently, that end of the pew was sitting right on one board, some detached from the adjoining porch, and when she sat down, they'd all stood up to move over. She made room for her, and they all seemed to sit down together. That board broke, and as they sat down, the girl next to Mrs. Chapel happened to have her leg back up under, and her leg was broken badly. So we had to have that taken care of. She was carried out of the meeting. Eventually came back before the campaign was over and found the law. He just stopped a murder right across the street from that building. One afternoon I went out visiting. One of those young ladies had found Christ in the farm right across the street, and I thought there was something wrong when I pulled up. I heard some screaming in the house. I heard two or three girls calling, "Don't, don't, don't." Finally, I went around the house, and here I saw a man stained with blood. He had two big rocks in his hand. He was covered with blood. I said, "What's going on around here?" And then he recognized me. When he did, why, the door opened, and there stood the other man, the brother of these two girls, and he had an axe handle in his hand. The axe head wasn't on the handle. It was a brand new handle, and it was stained with blood. These two men had gone at it, and were both just stained with blood. And it hadn't have been that those two girls succeeded in pulling their brother in and slamming the door on Dudley, there would have been a murder. So we finally got the two of them together, and they decided to call it off. And this one left that community, went out west. They hadn't heard him for months after I checked on it. He hadn't come back. But that was the situation. Then the Lord began to work, and this preacher began getting a little jealous. And I found out he was spreading it around the community that I was a Catholic, and he had attended one or two of the meetings. So I found out the meeting the day he was going to have his service, and I went out. I sat and listened to him, and then when the meeting was over, I went up, and his deacons were gathered around him, and he seemed a little surprised that I was there, but I walked up to him, and I said, first of all, he said, "How are you?" Well, I said, "I'm all right." I said, "I just want to say this, that I hear that I'm being accused of being a Catholic." I said, "Any man who has heard me preach one sermon and says I'm a Catholic, he doesn't know any more about God's salvation than a Hottentot." Mm-hmm. Of course, the preacher was the one who spread around. He dropped his head. Well, I didn't say it, but quite evidently he did. The others didn't call his hand on it. Anyway, the opposition continued, as you said a while ago, there are many adversaries.
So one night I received a letter to the effect that if I came out that night and preached, it would cost me my life. As I say, it was a very wicked community, a lot of bootlegging going on, fights and so on. So the chapels were quite perturbed, and they said, "Don't you go?" I said, "Yes, I'm going." So finally, some of the other men came around, of course, Martin I referred to a while ago, and Ed Smith. Finally, Mr. Chapel decided he would go along, and there were five others rather than myself, and we went out. There weren't many cars in those days. They used those old Hoover carts. Most of the people walked. So when we got there, there wasn't anybody in the building. There were crowds milling all around the outside, so we pulled up in the yard, and I said, "Fellas," and I said, "You just stay out here. I'm going in myself to see what happens." So I went in and walked in the building, and nothing happened. I walked right up to the front, took my foot off and down on the pew, and sat down with my Bible, get ready for meeting, and nothing happened. After a while, some of the others began coming in. So we got started in the meeting. About 250 people were out that night, and the end of the service, I said, "Well, evidently, there's some opposition to our having meetings here. Maybe we could find out the cause of that." I said, "I've just been preaching the gospel. I'd like to know who are opposing the preaching of the gospel. Why was my life threatened?" I said, "Would those who are responsible and opposing what I'm preaching stand up?" No one stood up. So then there was a fellow, and he just got off
the county road in 5 years, in jail, 5 years in the county road, and he'd been guilty of participation in the murder, very hard character.
He'd been attending the meeting, and he jumped right up on the seat. When Nolan got up, he got up on the seat and he said, "Folks," he said, "I gave this piece of property for the building of this structure," and he said, "to my knowledge, it was to be used for the preaching of the Bible, and also," he said, "for other purposes, community purposes, but no one who is a Catholic or a Seventh or a Jehovah's Witness or a Communist could preach here. Now," he said, "I've been coming to these meetings. I'm no Christian, no profess to be, but I'm a whole lot better than some of you folks who say you are. Now," he said, "I want some of you men who are opposing Mr. Wilson to stand up here. Let's take a look at it." Well, no one dared stand up, and I'm glad they didn't, because the way he was talking, they'd like it in a fight. Anyway, we found out after the meeting, and before that service was over, I asked all who wished these meetings to continue, and everybody stood up. There wasn't one kept their seat. So we continued those meetings. We found out afterwards the reason, and they really meant business, those who wrote that letter. A group of young men about my own age had gotten together, and they heard about the threat, and they made known to these men, they said, "You lay your hands on Preacher Wilson, and we'll take care of you." And there were about 50 men, young folks, who got together, and thus the Lord used them to prevent any harm or injury. There are a couple of interesting things. These men, when we get there, showing how they didn't seem to respect the place, we'd get there at night, and they'd all be standing around like sometimes I suppose you see these cowboys, and they're standing there with a hat cocked on one side, chewing tobacco, smoking, sitting on the stove, and everything else. Cool weather. And some of them were dressed up. They were just in their farm clothes. They were hard men. Some of them didn't look as though they'd seen a razor in 3 weeks. They'd come in there, walk around, and jabber and swear and spit and all the rest of it, until we were ready to start the meeting. One night before the meeting, I got up, I said, "Fellas, I'm surprised at you men. I said, you come in here like a herd of cattle. You have no respect for this place at all. We're preaching the gospel, and I think the gospel deserves reverence. And you come in here, you stand around the stove, you smoke, and you tell stories, and you spit all over the stove and over the ashes. Well," I said, "this is a church building. We're just going to have meetings here. And you should respect me." I suppose we took quite a chance in saying that, but you know, it was the most amusing thing. And I think to this day, if you told Mr. Chapel this, he'd just about break his side laughing. The next night, none of those men came in the building until we got up to the opening hymn. And then they start in. That's all they got up in the pew. As soon as they get inside the door, they take their hats off. And again, on tiptoe and not a word of them, and they all sit right up front above the first 2 or 3 rows. Those fellas came night after night. I never saw one of them saved, but I saw many of them standing and eating. Now, whether any of them have gotten saved since, only God knows. But I'm going to share one more incident in this connection, and then our time's almost up now, in fact it is. When we went there, one of those 12 deacons, an old fellow, couldn't read nor write. And he came up to me 2 or 3 nights after the campaign got started. He said, "Mr. Wilson," he says, "you know, I know what you're talking about. 40 years ago," he said, "I was saved in the cornfield. I could take you to the very spot," he says, "where I got saved. Where I trust the Lord, and I know I was saved. And I've known it for 40 years. I can't read the Bible. And I know," he says, "when it's being preached." And I think he was the only one of those 12 people that knew Christ. So, he said to me one night, he said, "Look, I don't have any money, but," he said, "I'd like to do something for these things. I'd love to hear the word preached." He said, "Who put the kerosene in these lamps?" Well, there were about 12 kerosene lamps that lit up that building. Well, I said, "As of now, I couldn't tell you. Only going on about 3 nights, I know who's been putting the kerosene." He says, "Can I do it?" Well, I said, you'd be happy for you to do that. If you want to do it, it's unto the Lord. He said, yeah, I'll be glad to do that unto the Lord. I want to do my part. So it was a little, kind of a community store about 2 miles down the crossroads. It sold gas and groceries. This old fellow, Polkett, was the same man, I suppose, about 65 at that time. And he used to go down and get a gallon of gas and a 5-gallon can. And about every 3 or 4 nights, he'd go down in this can and get a gallon of gas. Well, they had never known a revival to go longer than 1 week out there. So we had gone on. And he'd get his gallon of gas and come back, and he went on 3 weeks, and I announced the 4th week. And so he went on down after I announced I was going on the 5th week. He went down on the Monday night and said, I want some more gas, more currency. The man says, how much longer is that fellow going to preach up there? And he says, and how much currency do you want this time? He says, fill up the can, he's going to preach till Jesus comes. So, anyway, the old fellow was quite enthusiastic, and since then he's gone home to be the Lord. So there are just some of the experiences we've had in our early days in Raleigh, North Carolina, and around there. Now, next week we'll continue on our work around Raleigh, and then we'll move on to Winston State.